this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy. Be sure to check us out on Facebook, our YouTube channel, and our newsletter, and our great sponsors, Your Dolce Vita, Italy Rooting, and Abitivo Casa. And I have a great guest today, Joseph Quadra, who is the CEO and founder of Storysaver.com. So welcome, Joseph. Thanks for being here. Not necessarily Italian, but he helps Italians tell their stories. So welcome, Joseph. And let's talk about Storysaver.
Good morning, Bob. Very happy to be here and excited to chat with you today.
Well, thanks. Thanks. I appreciate you taking the time. So you're not a storyteller by your initial trade, right? You were a banker, yeah? Like me.
Yeah, I was a banker. Yeah, no, we're just chatting about that. You're at Chase and I was at Morgan Stanley. Yeah, so it's always interesting. People are curious to hear how I started out as a banker on Wall Street, and now I own a company that helps people write biographies and memoirs. And kind of the way that I explain it is that I say my life was kind of split between my profession and my passion. So my profession was always finance. I went to University of Notre Dame out in South Bend, Indiana, and I studied finance there. I got an MBA in finance and strategy from NYU. And then I was a banker for 17 years. But really my passion ever since I was a kid was writing. I started out writing short stories and poetry. I won some award, although I cannot find it. There was some local newspaper I won a poetry award for. And I was so excited as a kid, although I've not been able to locate that newspaper and verify my claims. But yeah, I wrote poetry, short stories, novellas. And after college, I wrote three novels. And this is obviously while I was a banker, a full-time banker. After I finished my third novel, and this was maybe like 2013, 2014, I realized that I no longer wanted to invent stories in my head and share them in books, that I wanted to interview real people and share their stories with others. And so I started a blog where I literally walked around the streets of Manhattan on the weekends on my time off, and I walked up to everyone from men in three-piece suits to homeless people. And I asked them stories of questions about their lives. And, you know, I discovered through this process that everyone has a story to tell, but that not everyone is a storyteller. And also that there's an intense interest in the untold stories of others. And so I started, you know, just posting these stories on my blog and ended up getting about 1.5 million views of my stories. And I also realized through this process that what I was doing, you know, interviewing people and sharing their stories was journalism. And so sort of on a whim, I decided to apply to Columbia Journalism School. I think it's the only Ivy League journalism program. And I was like, you know, there's no way in a million years I'll get in, you know, because when I was at the information session, a lot of the other people that were applying had interviewed heads of state and presidents and cabinet members. And I spent most of my time, you know, interviewing homeless people on the weekends. So it was a little bit different than the typical candidate. Much to my surprise, I got into Columbia Journalism School. And then from 2018 to 2021, I became a professionally trained and published journalist. And in 2021, it was sort of a chance conversation I had with a friend of mine who knew of my novel background, my novel writing background, my journalism background, and my business background, and suggested that I start a company that helps people capture their life stories. And so that's what I did. That was back in 2021. And so a little over 2 years later, still going strong.
That's fantastic. And I wish I had found you before I published my book, because I'm not a writer.
Yeah.
Could have used the help for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's one thing we always say, Bob, is like, and I'll butcher the quote now, but there's a George Orwell quote where he says something along the lines of like, writing a book is like a long, exhausting struggle with like something you cannot control or understand, and nobody would undertake that initiative. No, it's like a long, painful bout with an illness. Nobody would undertake that initiative unless they're driven by demons they cannot withstand or they cannot suppress or ignore. So basically, that wasn't a very good job of paraphrasing, but It's a very torturous process to write a book, so we make it easy for our clients. We do all the hard work. All they have to do is agree to be interviewed by us on the phone, Zoom, or in person.
And that's one of the messages I try to get across to people is that we need to preserve our history, our personal histories for future generations. Nobody ever did that before. 100 years ago, nobody would even think about doing that. But to me, it's important, whether you're Italian or you're Irish or you're German or whatever you are, to be able to pass that story down. Otherwise, they get lost. They disappear.
Yeah, there's a another really good quote. I love quotes, and it says that death steals everything except your stories, and it will steal those too if you're not careful. And the reality is that everything pretty much about somebody disappears in 2 to 3 generations if you don't record it. Now we're still reading Leonardo da Vinci's sketchbooks from 500, 600 years ago. Typically for your average person, once your direct family passes away, that's it. And so it's really important for us to help people preserve those stories. And it's incredibly important work. And the other thing I'll say is that it's interesting, back in the day, we could, people also had things like notebooks. They would record, they would have journals or diaries, and they'd have photo albums. They would have postcards. They would have physical, tactile things that we could remember them by. Nowadays, we don't have that. Everything is like in the ether of the internet. It's in text messages and emails. And so, interestingly enough, even though we've never been more connected, even though data has never been more at our fingertips, it's now more important than ever to make a concerted effort to save these things in the ephemeral world that we live in.
Yeah, I agree. And I have an ancestor going back to the Renaissance in Italy, Isabella d'Este, and they have something like 22,000 letters of hers received and sent. So to your point, back then, and who would ever do that? But there's a lot of that stuff laying around from back then that people just don't know about.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, we work with an archivist to, we write people's stories. Sometimes we'll write what I call tribute books about people who have passed away. And so we're just interviewing remaining family members. And one interesting thing is that when it comes to using an archivist to pull publicly available information, typically the further back we go, the easier it is to get the information. So if somebody said, somebody came over in 1918, versus 2018. What would be an easier way for the archivist to get documentation because of the nature of how assiduously things were stored and the paper copies that were kept? It's actually easier to get things from 1918 than 2018, ironically enough. So, and obviously if you go back into like, the 1600s, it's going to be more difficult. But for the people that we're dealing with who are alive today and want to hear the stories of their grandparents or great grandparents, they always say, "Oh, I'm sure you can't find anything, because my grandpa came over in the 1940s, and I said, "No, actually, counterintuitively, that's better." So, fun little
So
fact
you
that I
don't
learned.
you so you don't just help write the story, you actually help them research. Going back 100 years or 150 years, whatever.
We do. So, if it's a living person, then sometimes it'll be just as simple as sitting down and agreeing to be interviewed by us, and then we will write their story. The writers at StorySaver of 75 writers, they write for The New Yorker, The New York Times, The Washington Post, The Atlantic, on and on and on. So in some instances, we'll just interview somebody and then you'll have a professional writer capture your story. But you're right, we also will occasionally hire professionals that will pull publicly available information. So we've got World War II draft cards, marriage certificate, death certificate. One of my personal favorites is that a lot of people that immigrated to the United States that went through Ellis Island, it's very simple for us to find them and see the actual ship manifest that they arrived on, and you can see where their name was. So we've been able to get that for people. And then anything that's census information is also interesting to see. in 1955, when or whenever the census was, you can see at that time, what your great grandparent indicated as their source of income or things like that. And then anything else publicly available, for example, like newspaper articles that were written about them. So it's not only interviewing people that are alive when we're writing these tribute books, but also leveraging an archivist to pull publicly available information and to fill in the gaps where people don't have the answers to some of the questions.
Right. Yeah. So now you did send me one book about an Italian American family, a person who was actually a fascist in Italy.
Yeah.
So who asked you to write that book, and how did that work?
Yeah, so that was about a gentleman by the name of Aldo. We'll just mention first names, and his Aldo passed away in 1988. And I'm happy to tell you a little bit about Aldo's story, but sort of a legend in the family. And his grandson had always been fascinated to know what the whole story was. Like, he'd heard things, so my client was probably 6 or 7 when his grandfather passed away. And he had always revered his grandfather. He had always heard these fantastical stories and wanted to know what the real truth was, what was the actual story. So he hired us to write his grandfather's story, and we cobbled it together from interviews of probably 5 or 6 remaining people that were alive, as well as we hired a professional archivist to pull publicly available information. And so that's why we did it, and then and how we did it. And happy to tell you the story too. It's kind of a cool one.
Yeah. And what was interesting about it, as I was reading it, I actually, I'm from Queens, so I actually knew a lot of the places, and I knew the place upstate New York. And
Oh, really? Yeah.
it's a well-known place for Italians to, to know from back in the, 40s, 50s, 60s. It's pretty incredible story, especially the part where, because I'm a big believer, I always tell people who work for me, never lie to your boss. So there's that one bit in there where, he's being interviewed by the US government, and he was the only one who told the truth, so they let him in.
Yeah, the plan backfired because he, you know, his thought process was, as you said, he was an avowed fascist, loved Benito Mussolini. And it's funny, like, obviously, nowadays you hear that and instinctively, you think must have been a bad person. But I think at that time it was, Mussolini was the first person that had trains like running on time and the society functioning in a certain way. And so I think it was that aspect of it that attracted Aldo to him. But so he was, fought in World War II, and I think Greece and Yugoslavia, was shot in the knee, contracted malaria, all these things, and really did not want to come to the United States. His wife was trying to lure him there, and that when he was meeting with the consulate in Rome, he said that he was a fascist. And he thought that the person interviewing him would say, "Well, if you're a fascist, you're not coming to America." And instead, the officer, he pointed to all the other Italians in the room and said, "Each one of these people is a fascist. You are the only one that was truthful. You'll make a great American." And, next thing, he's on a boat to America. So I guess it is a lesson, I guess, in always telling the truth, and also that sometimes there are unintended consequences of actions.
I suppose, yeah. I guess so. Yeah, it is a fascinating story. So, if myself or somebody else wants to, use you, how's the process start? What do they do?
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
So basically what we do is the first thing would be a consultation, where I always tell people when somebody speaks to me, they're always talking about what the story is, and, I did this and I did that and I did went here and this is what I accomplished and these are the trials and tribulations that I went through. And I always listen patiently because that's obviously important to understand. And these are typically very deeply meaningful stories. And I always say to people, so that's the what. I want to know the why. Why do you want to tell that story? And you'll get wildly different responses. Some people will say, I want to capture the story because I'm getting older, or my father or mother is getting older. I want to capture their story, and I want it only to be shared with our family. This is an intensely private thing. And we'll meet others that say, I want to be a New York Times bestseller, and that they want to write a memoir that's going to be the next big thing. It's important for me to understand what the story is and why. And we can help people regardless of which path they want to go forward with. But it's important for me to understand from the outset what their intentions are and to make sure that we're being realistic. But basically, once I understand the story, what I'll do is I'll reach out to my 75 professional writers. As I mentioned to you before, these are writers that, the highest level of skill, writing for some of the best newspaper and magazines in the country. And I'll conduct a writer search based on what story the client wants to tell and why they want to tell it. And I kind of, one simple example that I gave is, let's say somebody said, hey, I went to the 1982 Olympics and I want to write about that story. And I'll say, okay, well, I have somebody that wrote for ESPN, somebody that writes for Sports Illustrated, and somebody that writes for the Sporting News. And I'll come back to the client and I'll say, these three people specialize in writing sports stories for like three very well-known publications. Here's their background. Here's what they've written. Here's what they want to write. And then the client can interview them, figure out which writer, because it's not only, what you've accomplished, but sometimes it's just that personal meshing, make sure that that occurs. And then once they select the writer, then we're really off to the races. And the writer will conduct interviews with the client, or if we're writing a tribute book for somebody that's passed away with the remaining people. They'll conduct interviews over the phone, typically like an hour a week. It can be exhausting to be interviewed. I remember as when I was studying journalism at Columbia, you'd interview somebody and it can be very exhausting. People think like, I'll sit down and tell you my life story over 8 hours. It doesn't really work like that from my experience. And so we tell people it can be an exhausting experience, particularly if you've never been interviewed. So let's just do it an hour per week. And so we'll set up an interview schedule with our clients to do an hour per week. After that, the writer will write the story. Client will get to review the first draft, add photos and captions. We will format it for a book, send them the final proof, and then once they give us the go-ahead, we will actually publish their book. Now, I mentioned to you when I asked about why, some people say, I just want 4 copies for my grandkids, and that's it. And then burn the manuscript, right? And other people, they want assistance with not only getting it published on, like Amazon, which we can do, but they want help marketing it. And for people who have a desire to have a book be commercially successful, I say, sadly, the easy part about writing a book is writing the book. The hard part is what comes after, the marketing it. McDonald's does not make the best hamburger in the world, but it markets so much that, everyone buys McDonald's hamburgers, right? So we have marketing partners who, after we write it, edit, and publish it, they can promote it and help get the word out. But yeah, that's pretty much the process. We like to, sort of say from soup to nuts. We do everything. From just all the client has to agree is to be interviewed. And, a few months after they start with us, we'll deliver them beautiful keepsake books that I judge if my company was successful, is that in 70 years they're sitting on their grandkids' coffee table somewhere after I'm long gone.
Yeah,
But yeah, that's the process. Yeah.
and like I said earlier, people really need to do that. We read about all these historical figures, but what is the, you you can or you can't relate to them. You know, my reason for writing the book was kind of twofold in that I kind of wanted to tell my research story, how I researched and things. But I had heard so many fascinating stories by people that I interviewed about what they found and just things that couldn't have been a coincidence. So, you know, I wanted to get that out there. And then also, because of my grandmother's noble roots, there were all of these Italian nobles and people from the Renaissance that we just don't hear about. So I wanted to include some of that stuff. But I want to ask you because I'd like to try and write a historical fiction, and I have a couple ideas, one in particular of my fourth great grandmother. How does one, if somebody wanted to do that, how does one go about starting that? I think for that, the research is easier at least than building a character. And that's kind of where I'm struggling is building a character.
Yeah, so I mean, so are you looking to write this historical fiction with a ghostwriter, or you're just speaking primarily for yourself?
In this case, I would, well, I don't know if it would be a ghostwriter or a partner or something. I could do, the thing is, I could do the research because I know how to do the research and I could find it and I have a lot of information already. What I'm struggling with is building the characters, you know. And I'll mention it's really a fabulous book about Sicily in the 1200s by Carlo Treviso that I read recently. He's built such rich characters that you don't want to put the book down, if you know what I mean.
I mean, so I'll say two things. Number one is I just finished a illustrated novel for a client. I typically don't take on projects myself. When I first started my company, I did. I would take on projects. I just typically don't anymore. But I took on an illustrated novel, and it's a very, very different process than writing nonfiction, as you might imagine. I don't want to, I won't get into too much of it because we're currently, the book is being illustrated and then it will be published and hopefully successful. But, you know, it took a lot of fits and starts to get the voice and the story correct for the client. Client gave me, you know, you just mentioned a book that you liked about the character development, and the client gave me a book, and then I wrote a first draft. Based off of what I thought the client was looking for, that was so wildly off that it was pretty much embarrassing, right? Because I thought I was delivering exactly what the client wanted, and he said, no, this is absolutely not. And so I think we all have the patience and the grace to say, okay, this is the starting point. Now we understand what we don't want. Let's work towards what we want. And I think so through a very iterative process, we're able to get to a place where working with a ghostwriter, I was able to write the illustrated novel that that he always wanted. But it's a very iterative approach. I think you really have to be aligned and both be committed to the end result in order for it to work out. But in terms of character development, to answer that question more specifically, I've never been formally trained. As a novelist. But I have read about the art of writing fiction, and I always remember that there's a difference between round and flat characters. A flat character is just, you know, the dashing guy that's a very successful businessman and very debonair. A round character is somebody that has all those attributes but is deeply insecure, or, you know, in other words, whenever I'm building characters, I'm sure that as human beings, there's nobody that's perfect. We are all flawed, deeply flawed. And so I literally will chart out what are the positive attributes, what are the reasons that the character exists. And then I will intentionally think of what negative traits give them so that they become more relatable. It is absolutely not relatable. You know what I mean? The protagonist where it's just everything is perfect about him or her. And it's just like, you become bored with it. You don't know why, and it's because it's not realistic. One of my recent favorite novels that won the 2017 Pulitzer Prize was Donna Tartt's The Goldfinch. And the main character of that book, it's a massive book. I think it's like 500,000 words. The main character of that book is very gripping, but it's so deeply flawed. And I don't even think, you don't even like him really at the end of the book, but it's relatable. So that'd be my one thing, is to create round characters that are, more diverse set of characteristics, and make sure that you've got plenty of flaws.
Well, the one person I'm thinking of is actually my fourth great grandmother, who was again from a noble family. But what's interesting about her is she was the Duchess of this town in Molise, and she left her family to run away with a French lieutenant, probably just before Napoleon went into Italy. And she left the family. Eventually, this soldier passed away. She married some Italian doctor or something. But then it comes back to Napoleon again, because I think she was fighting the French takeover. And eventually she, and I could never understand why, but eventually she went to Paris. She died in Paris in 1815 or something like that, but was given a stipend from the French government. So it's this really intriguing story, that I really would like to try build upon, but I want to do it, in a historical fiction type of way, because I think it would be very interesting to have something like that. Why did this woman, who basically had everything, run away with this French soldier?
And I think, I mean, I guess by definition, this is an obvious statement, but all fiction derives from real life. Every single book that's ever been written either derives from something that occurred. I would say there's only two places: either something that occurred in real life, or a derivative off something else that they read in literature, right? And so, yeah, I think that's a marvelous starting point for a historical fiction novel.
I mean, I think it would be fun. So, it's in the back of my mind with, along with, some of the other things that I'm trying to do. So finally, before we go, how does everybody get in touch with you? What's the website so they could find you if they want to go forward with writing their
Yeah,
history?
sure. So the company name is StorySaver, and that's Story, which is probably obvious. What might not be obvious is the spelling for the second word, which is Savor. Little double entendre. We're not only so it's StorySaver, not only saving stories, but allowing people to savor them and appreciate them. So www.storysaver.com. And my email is Joseph at storysaver.com. And I guess one of the last things I'll say, Bob, is that our company mission is to democratize the biography writing process, right? And what does that mean? It sounds cool, but what does that actually mean? It means that historically you needed to be rich or famous to have your story captured for your children and your grandchildren and your progeny. And we're making it affordable to regular people to have their story captured. And so that is really the goal of my company, and it is a passion of mine to help people capture their story. So, for people that are looking to do that, please don't hesitate to reach out. We do free consultation, kind of let you know what we can and can't do, and pricing and whatnot. And it's a investment, and it's a process, but it's deeply meaningful. And I certainly enjoy working with clients doing this more than I did as a banker.
I'm sure.
It's
I'm
somewhat
sure.
more gratifying to help people capture life stories. Not to talk ill of banking, but
And to your point, the example that you sent me was really great. It was, a rich story, and photographs and everything in there. And like you said, it was so hard for me to do it by myself. It was brutal.
Yeah, and you know, it's one other thing I'll say, Bob. It's like sometimes people will reach out to me and they'll say, "Why do I need to hire a company to write my family story or to write my story? Like, why shouldn't I do it?" And I give them an answer they're probably not expecting. I said, "If you have the skill and the discipline to write and the time to write your story, you should. Because nobody, I don't care who you hire, you could hire the best ghostwriter in the world." Nobody will ever care about your story more than you do, and nobody will ever write your story as good as you can if you have the skill, the time, and the discipline. But the reality is that most people might not have one of those three things, in which case it doesn't work out, in which case you hire a professional, and that's when we're happy to come in. I literally speak with people every single day, people that are from 37 years old up to 91, who say they have their whole life wanted to capture their life story. They just never got around to it. So that's when you hire a professional and let us do the hard work, and you just have to tell your stories.
Well, that's great. That's great. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time, and we'll get the message out there to people. And I'll say this, it's very, very important for you to capture your story for
Yeah.
future generations.
Absolutely.